Let's go. There we go.
Shimmy, shimmy.
A little cup of jam.
I keep looking at you.
That's, well, that's all we got to look
so
at
so far
right
away.
Now. I know. Hey, are we live in here?
We're doing it right. We're doing it right. Hey, thanks for tuning in, everyone. You are watching or listening to
MLO.
And today we are going to unpack, and I'm going to use unpack because it's holiday season.
Yeah, I mean, gift wrapping, unpacking, and cutting boxes is what it's about, right?
Makes sense, Casey, but we are specifically talking about debt.
Mm.
We are talking about the holiday spending and the impact on the U.S. household.
And debt, you know.
Hammer time.
Guys, we got a lot of it. Let's just be real. If you ever, what's that scary website, you know, U.S. World Debt, you ever gone on that thing and typed that in? Pretty impressive, but guys, there's some stuff that needs to be said regarding, you know, credit cards, debt spending, and holidays, and we're just going to try to give you some nuggets here, but I'm going to fair warn everybody, this is a lot of statistics we're about to throw at you.
Yeah, we did a lot of research, and we were joking before. It was like, I think I've prepped more for this than the SATs back in high school, but, and not to scare anybody, like, I respect what you just said, but at the same time, hey, like, the United States economy is completely worked around credit and debt, not only from a consumer standpoint,
right
easy, but also businesses, right. The government itself. So really, it's factual, and this is what we got to do to get by. So we're going to talk about a few different buckets here. It's like, hey, what's the average amount spend on Christmas? What's the average interest rates for credit cards? And maybe some objective plans and strategies to help you tackle it. So just to kind of rip into it early, though, we do have to be a little more compliantly heavy than normal, right, Casey?
Yeah, especially if we're going to be talking kind of in this realm of credit and how that affects and the different, like, basically different sections it affects people, you know, incomes, credit scores, that stuff.
Yeah, lots of different layers to it. And the most important thing is, like, we're going to be talking base about credit and debt specific, and we aren't licensed credit improvement experts or financial advisors. We are licensed mortgage originators or mortgage advisors. So
yes, sir.
We have to say that all of this comes from a perspective of experience, you know, working with thousands of home buyers, home sellers, and refinancing. But also just our personal experience. We look at a lot of applications, right, Casey?
Right.
So
I
we
mean,
see a lot of credit reports.
We like to, you know, sometimes say, you know, we don't, you know, have to dive all into your guys' stuff on financing, but we read a lot of credit reports. Let's be honest. We really do a lot of credit, you know, review and looking at that stuff. And guys, we are, I mean, essentially we're lending you credit, right? We're lending you credit to buy the home at the end of the day. So hopefully we can give you guys some good perspective and some life lessons. And, you know, all of us, I think, have maybe had a little credit fault here or there. So hopefully we got some stories for you too.
Life lessons.
Life lessons, hopefully. I don't know.
With your beard, it's almost like, I don't know, it's so fatherly.
I really gained
snuggle
some years.
By the fire, kids. We're, yeah. It's time for a life lesson.
Life lesson.
Let's come together. Get close. Crisscross applesauce. I got some fun stats that aren't so intimidating right off the bat, because we did a lot of research for this particular episode. So, we all know it was the holiday season. We're rolling into a new year here. So one thing I found, the average spent in the United States on your spouse for the holidays, what would you guess someone would spend on your spouse?
Let me get a
dollar
guess.
Amount.
Yeah, dollar amount. So we're going average spent on the spouse, correct?
Yeah, don't overthink it.
Yeah, no. I'm going to go at clean
$1,200. On your spouse? National? That's a lot of money. Not even close.
Can I backtrack it to $250?
$123 is the average amount spent, nice. According to Fortunely.com, an article that we pulled up. It's this amazing tool. I don't know if you guys have heard it. It's called Google. we use it a lot to prepare for these episodes for fun little facts like that. Another one, 50% of U.S. citizens do not spend any money on holiday decor.
Really?
One in two, according to this article.
Wow, that's interesting.
They don't do it.
Well, I was wondering how people got to the point where it's like, you know, the Griswolds, right? Where everything's covered on your lawn. Mm-hmm. And someone said, you know, you have to buy something every year in store. Like everything, every year you're buying something new for the yard or something, right? But then there's 50 out there, like, not spending a penny on it.
Well, you got to put it a little bit. I mean, there's probably a big bucket of people that, like, say, don't celebrate Christmas. Like, it's not a part of their religion or their practice. But, I mean, in, like, my neighborhood, not everyone puts up lights. Like, you know, we don't put up lights. We decorate it. But, like, getting on a roof is really hard for our house because it's a very steep pitch. So, I don't know. I mean, I thought that was really interesting, Casey. 50% of people don't spend a dollar. Ain't no dollar spent. Ain't no
dollar means. I mean, that's honestly, that's a little mind blowing for me. I figured at least, you know, at least you're going to get some cookies or something, you know?
Oh, yeah. Okay, another good one. That's a good 47.4% of women actually want jewelry as their gift.
See,
okay. It sounds obvious, but I think it's profound to bring to the table and really digest that, especially as males.
47 want jewelry.
Yeah, that's a roundup. 50, yeah,
that's 50. Like, I think that's where my mind was tweaking to, and I'm like throwing out $1,200 spent on your wife, because good for you guys if you're doing that. That is a lot of cheese. But then it's like you think jewelry, but then, I mean, yeah, though, I mean,
50% rounding up.
Yeah.
And you just put yourself in an interesting position because you know your wife's going to watch this. So you set a high budget for yourself for her.
I know.
Publicly. Like, wow. $123, honey. Publicly. That's the max. Get creative. It's so, thought, not dollar, right, Casey?
It's not dollar, but it does make sense because if I really am thinking about it, I mean, I typically don't see a lot of jewelry getting passed around during, you know, Christmas time. I mean, at least.
I would assume a lot of that's very personal.
Yeah, it's probably just like.
And it's a desire, too. It's not an executed percentage. This is a statistic.
Good stuff here.
So, to throw in, and I don't want to get too far off. This is just fun intro. We're warming people up because we're going to get into the serious stuff that you might look at yourself and be like, oh, I fall into that bucket. So this is fun, right?
For sure.
So we talked about women wanting jewelry. 32.7% of men truly just want a gift card. One third.
Yeah, boys out there.
One third of males would just like a gift card. And this particular article from fortunely.com actually referred to it as a voucher. So it's like, oh, it's so professional. It's a gift card, all right? Voucher. Voucher, like, isn't that what you get when you check, like, your overcoat in at, totally. At the steakhouse?
That's how or you get in your voucher. Like,
oh, yeah, the parking voucher. It's validation. That's what it's called. So I thought that was really interesting. And finally, the lowest statistic, 3.46% of people are admitted to lying about liking their gift to somebody. I thought it would be higher. Only 3.46% have lied about that. Maybe that's just a conversation where the gift giver and the receiver really just know that that wasn't a good gift. So it just goes into the ethers of not spoken conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's where that stat really got skewed there. Not really fraud related, just it swept under the rug, the holiday rug.
Thank you, Aunt. For the beautiful sweater.
Oh my gosh, I love my aunt. But once, I think I was like 6 or 7, she got me a frisbee that didn't fly when thrown. That's a real thing. Like, it was a broken frisbee. I don't know how you even find that or design one that doesn't work. You threw it and it was very deflating.
Yeah, I'm surprised on those rubber ones, honestly, the little flimsy rubber ones. Like, my wife came home with one from Target the other day. I'm like, this thing doesn't fly. Dude, look at this thing. It's like,
why
skin.
Did she
it's
buy
like
that skin. At Target?
I don't know. You know, they always set you up on those checkouts, you know. Checkouts.
It is the grab and go.
They'll get you. Those grab and go sections will get you.
Well, now with social distancing, there's so much more time spent just like kind of staying apart and looking at these little options, you know. Like, I saw a guy at Target really contemplate deeply about something near the register, and it was one of the Bananagram games where it's just like a banana zipped and like all the letters are in it. Yeah. Seriously, I'd never seen someone like really dive mentally, and like he looked at the tag, like this little tag that was on it, the front and the back, like how much it was, where it was likely made and produced.
Totally.
And he put it in his cart, out of his cart, back on, back in. Yeah. And I was just, I was waiting for my, you know,
did
my
you,
chance
did you come
to check
up,
out.
Did you come up and tap him on the shoulder behind and go, excuse me, sir?
No, you don't touch people in public.
That was not on the COVID list. Yeah. You see this flying frisbee solo singles? That's all day.
I'm sure it was like price matching it on Google and Amazon. He's like, well, I could get this for $6.79 on Amazon, guaranteed by January 4th, or I could pay $7.99 here at Target, but be rewarded with instant gratification for it going home today. So
I'm taking,
yeah,
I'm taking the bye.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, we're getting way off. That was a really fun though. Stats. Very
I like the stats. And for anyone that, you know, just jumping in and tuning in, mm-hmm. we'll kind of catch them up. You guys are listening to MLO podcast, Modern Loan Officer. We're trying to give you guys some fun holiday statistics here before we really kind of just unpack, since it is Christmas time, some of these just average consumer debt levels, credit cards, and kind of we're going to go into some of that spending. So hopefully you guys that are jumping in, you guys stick around, watch and listen, and we're going to give you guys some good stats.
Yeah, nice resurface there. To Thanks, reiterate guys. The title and the subject, debt, holiday spending and the impact on the U.S. household. So good. We're going to roll that right into the average spent every holiday season by a home in the United States. And that figure actually runs at about $1,500 per household. So that's a pretty bit substantial amount of money. And it's going to be on a sliding scale, income-based. Like there might be some huge savers, higher incomes, more disposable income, and then maybe some lower income houses. So that is an average. But note that the average house does, according to the articles that we're researching here, $1,500 on Christmas. So
that's average spent on Christmas per household. Average $200.
Yeah, and we're using holidays, and not just Christmas, because not everybody celebrates Christmas. But let's roll that into the average credit card debt per household.
Yeah,
and as of the 2020 stats, we're rounding up here at about $8,000 per household in credit card debt alone. This does not count your private loans, your auto loans, student loans. We're just talking about credit card debt, Casey.
Yeah, that one, I mean, it can get tricky because I think there's a misunderstanding with that credit card. And at the end of the day, for consumers that are young getting credit cards, they need to be fully aware of, you know, how that can snowball later on or, you know, how that even works. I mean, how about I just give you a breakdown? You know, credit cards are basically what comes with the cost of borrowing. You know, like if you're going to borrow some money, you need credit, you know, that credit card can't be there, but there is a cost to this, right? And I think a lot of people need to understand that. And hopefully we're going to kind of break that down for you guys by giving you guys kind of what these averages interest rates are and kind of these different debt levels. And it can help you make a better educated decision when it comes to purchasing or getting a credit card.
Yeah, and I think some of the basics rolling into like how the interest on credit, because I think
like break it down for them, right?
It's a bigger thing where like at least the United States really doesn't do a good job of educating kids, adults, anyone on how credit works. And it's kind of this like Wizard of Oz, what's my score? We are adapting and improving the consumer model with FICO and different advantage scores credit wise so that consumers are more educated on the impact of their score on a more consistent basis than we saw just 3 to 5 years ago. But one thing, just the basics to know, like the worse of the credit score that you have as a consumer, the higher the interest rate. So that might sound really obvious to some people, but not a lot of people are familiar with the kind of brackets, if we want to call them there. So you were, and I want to break that down here because I've got this little chart here, but the average interest rate.
Interest rate, yeah. I'll
give you guys what were we seeing on
some
that?
Some nuggets here, and this is, we pulled this from some Business Insider, but we had some backing on Federal Reserve info, which is really, really, you know, good figures to use. And anyone out there, you guys can go on Federal Reserve, and they try to break it down per quarter what's going on in any kind of consumer and credit card spending. So if you really want to statistic and nerd out a little bit, get on that Federal Reserve site, and it'll give you all the data you want. Average credit card interest rate, we're going to call this the APR. So average APR for the credit cards across the United States right now is 14.5%.
14.5%. And to put that together more to maybe specific to an individual listener and watcher, is that 14.5% is the average of all of them. But the credit for 720 and higher.
Yeah.
I'm looking at 13.5.
Yes, sir.
At 660 to 719. 16.5. So, and then it goes to 19, 20, and 21% averages when you go to like the mid 600s or lower and into the 500s. So that 14 is an average. Like there's some even consumers out there who might even have a 25% interest rate regardless of credit, just because of that company is assessing a very specific I don't want to say fraud, but not so favorable terms.
Not so favorable terms. And that's a great point you're putting out there, too. Like, you know, we don't want to come across and say, like, 14.5%, guys, everybody's got that, right? Yeah, it definitely is going to be catered
towards. There's that sliding scale.
Sliding scale with the credit scores and stuff. You know, one thing that surprised me on that Federal Reserve, you know, information was actually, you know, according to their data that they had in October 2020 from Pulling, the revolving credit, so that's going to be like your credit cards, your revolving credit, interest rates and APR stuff has actually decreased, you know, and I'm sorry, I don't know exactly the time range. I mean, what I was looking at was from 15, I think, but this could be a little bit longer on what they're going off of, but it came down about 6.7%, on this average that they're kind of looking at. So that's kind of, you know, that's good to know, but at the end of the day, there's that sliding scale, right? So you could have someone that's at that 20, you know, and then, you know, someone at the 14.5. So.
Yeah. And we are seeing this year, consumer debt actually go down. So I think some of that's related to, you know, the feds are setting zero to minimal interest rates, which are slightly lowering credit card debt. And then that's consumers are adjusting and wanting to stay out of debt in fear of maybe an unstable future. Now, that doesn't fit for everybody. You know, some people have had to rely on credit to get by, right, Casey? So it's not a like one size fits all scenario. But I think what's happening is the United States is seeing that we cannot get out of debt. That's becoming a more public thing rather than an unknown thing, right? And people are acting on it. Also, fair credit models where it's easier to access maybe an estimated or a trending credit score from like CreditWise, NerdWallet, all those Credit Karma, those estimators. So people are becoming more aware of their score. And that is a big chunk. Like according to a lot of articles, you're looking at about one-third-ish, maybe upwards to 50% of your total credit score is coming from this history of credit. On-time payments, credit utilization.
Great points.
Which utilization is probably the biggest bucket. It's how much credit do you have allowed and then what percentage have you used of it? So for simple math, say you got a $1,000 limit, right? And you've got $500 balance at the end of the statement, that's 50% utilization. So what we use as mortgage advisors, and it's handed down knowledge. Like once again, you know, we're not credit experts. I don't even know if that exists, if there really is a licensed credit expert, but we have to put that in the notes. But the general rule of thumb is you're wanting to keep that utilization ratio at about 20% or lower. And that's giving you a very good at bat every single month, right, Casey, to get the most amount of points possible.
For sure. And it keeps you in that nice kind of, you know, lower balance of your credit card, a nice revolving range. And again, yeah, we are not credit repair specialists or credit experts. This is kind of just passed down knowledge and stuff like that we have learned. But Addy makes a great point, guys. You do have to have, you know, credit and debt to, you know, start to establish and build a credit score. You know, you need to have history. You need to have that kind of stuff. One thing, you know, that I find very interesting, and there's been studies, and I'm not just throwing this out of there out of the wind, but in your less income, lower income, poverty neighborhoods, this kind of stuff isn't talked about as or is openly educated to people coming up in those areas. I mean, you don't have grandpa and grandma sitting down and saying, you know, make sure you're getting a good job and you're setting yourself up and not getting buried in credit. Those conversations necessarily don't really happen there. I think there's a big growth for just information and knowledge, you know, for people to be prepared when they are finally kind of stepping into that adulthood and coming out, you know, because it's easy, I think, for people to get lost in credit cards and credit card debts.
I think it's definitely a missing piece just fundamentally in our educational system. It completely goes over my head to why we don't talk about it. I mean, I have theories that are quite negative and a conspiracy that like the credit card companies are out there paying public schools not to teach it so that they can make more money on interest. I don't know if that's true. Shouldn't have said that. But
I do a side theory on that. I
like feel
that.
Like someone like someone's going to be knocking on my door. And but yeah. I think that it's definitely the basics and understanding. And there's a lot of misperceptions out there, and it's really it's difficult to find a safe place to learn about it. So right off the bat, yeah, you need to establish credit sooner than later. And there's some great approaches to even teenagers at 18 working with their parents on maybe authorized user and helping establish credit at an earlier age. But a lot of people get stuck to, like, say they can only get, they got to start with like a credit rebuilding, right? And
yeah,
it causes a deposit. And then the disclosures of the terms weren't clearly laid out and they can't increase their limit. So now they're always stuck with a $250 credit card, which they can only put, you know, $50 max on, or they exceed that 20%. And then their credit score gets lopsided and it gets idled or anchored and it can't progress. So there's a lot to be said about establishing credit early, making sure you're working with relative companies. And if you ever need someone to at least push you in the right directions, we have a lot of tools, and there's a list of people, Casey, that we can introduce you to, and links and articles to get you on the right page. But we always urge people to hit us up on that, the VIP line, right?
Yeah, but we got that number. You guys can call it in. You guys can shoot comments on our Facebook when we're shooting live or anytime. That number, though, you can give us a call anytime. That number is going to be 503-847. And that is the VIP. 903-8. So 503-847-9038. That's our phone number. You guys can hit us up anytime you got questions involved in, you know, whatever it is. We're here to help you. Mainly real estate and mortgages, but some of this credit card stuff, we can definitely try to give you guys our best information. And I think, you know, you're making great points, Addy. There are so many layers to it. It's like, just because you get like, okay, we don't have any credit established, need to get it going, right? Mm-hmm. We get a $250 card, but now you got to understand how to use it, because it's like, it's only $250. You know, you go put $200 on there. Now we're getting close to maxing this thing out, and that can adversely affect you, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't just like, you're not just getting good credit just for having a credit score. You got to manage it well. And so that's a great point that I don't think people realize too, because I think that first credit card is that's probably the biggest one to focus on, like, and set it up right. Right. Mm-hmm. Because that one could be could be the snowball bridge effect if you get, you know, too small. So I think, you know, I don't know if we pulled that statistic, but that'd be that'd be a good one to know on the, you know, what's the average balance on a first card. But you're right. If it's 250, you know, you might set yourself up for a tighter kind of, you know, spending or trying to figure that out. Maybe the $500 or $1,000 is good to go. Mm-hmm. But again, don't want to overextend it because you maybe haven't had credit. You don't want to, you know, figure that out the hard way. So
yeah,
some fine line layers.
Yeah, and like going into just kind of at least how I go through the steps of the credit introduction when I'm doing mortgage strategy calls with people. And once again, you know, I don't even know a licensed credit advisor. I don't know if they exist, but I'm a mortgage advisor, a licensed mortgage advisor in the state of Oregon and Washington. But how I kind of experience and credit and explain it to people is, if you're trying to dive in, typically if you have an established credit, you're subscribing to the I hate credit mindset, which I totally understand. I remember my father at one point, I don't remember a specific age, telling me like credit cards are horrible and this and that and that, and I'm sure it was out of frustration, but that implanted in my brain, you know, growing up and eventually becoming an adult, still working at it. I always like to say, hey, if you're going to start somewhere, if you have a banking relationship, meaning you have an established checking or savings account, that's a really good place to start and see if that particular banking institution has a starting credit card. Because you actually do have some sort of history with that bank. So they can see that, oh, you know, Casey gets his payroll checks deposited here, he pays his bills. So often they're going to be a little more comfortable than, say, going to a major credit card company that doesn't know who you are. You're just a random social security number, date of birth, and name, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So start there. I think that's a really good place to go and work with someone that's easy and convenient and sees your cash flow.
That's consistent. That's a great point, Addy. And God, that's a nugget there.
It's a good way to start.
You're tuning in. That's a good piece to know. Do not, you know, if you wanted to start somewhere, maybe start with that local credit union that you know bank with, or your local bank, and start there, because that actually makes a lot of sense.
You do have a relationship there,
and I've never even thought about it that way. I mean, you call up your 1-800 Discover or whatever. They don't know you. They don't have any. You got no backing, and you're a fresh young kid trying to get a card, you know?
Yeah.
That's a great point, Addy.
I would say, too, like, because, you know, I've had my own journey with credit over the last decade or so, been at the bottom, been at the top, right? So when you're trying to adapt a new habit of spending and say you're intimidated by credit or you're trying to manage in your spending, one of the habits that I've seen highly effective just from observation and personal approach is when you're purchasing something with a credit card, because you want those to be active, but you want to stay under that threshold, use it like a debit card. So now with mobile banking, it's so convenient. Say you go into a store and you buy, you know, your lunch or whatever, but let's just use a sandwich. You buy a sandwich.
Yep.
Hypothetical, right?
Yeah.
You get that sandwich and maybe it's a great deal, $8.49 with a side and chips. Like great in a drink, fountain
that's
drink.
That's a good deal.
It's a good drink. But the fountain is actually diluted a little bit of water. That's how they save back on it. They do that at Costco if you pick up the 49-cent drink. Anyways, back on the course, you charge that on your card. It's going to show up on that mobile banking app. You go ahead and pay that. Get comfortable with using credit, but don't absorb that stress of debt. Like, oh, I can't use a credit card. And yeah. Just baby steps. Get the toes in the water. And it's okay. You'll get used to it over time. And it'll go from checking it every time you swipe your card and paying it on your mobile to maybe being an end of week activity. And then moving to payday activity. And then maybe a monthly activity. So I think this is a great
opportunity.
Yeah. And I think that's just a really, like, say you're trying to control your spending too. Don't bring all your cards to the store. If you're physically going, like, only bring one or the one you're going to use and set a budget and stick to it. And I think this is a good transition into some strategies we've researched on tackling debt. So most people are coming into it, Casey, of like, I have all this debt. What do I do? So where people could start from our research, once again, not financial advisors. It sucks we have to layer it so much with that, but that's
not CPAs, not financial advisors, not credit repair specialists. We are mortgage advisors and mortgage originators. And what we're giving you is passed down knowledge and knowledge that we have researched.
Exactly. And to keep it very hypothetical, if you have all your debt, it's effective to organize that debt on a sheet of paper. Write it all out in order of interest being higher. So the higher interest should be the one that you should focus on first. Or let me rephrase that. It would be most effective in interest savings to pay off the higher interest ones first. So if you owe $10,000, you're paying 20% on it versus $5,000 at 10%. Let's focus on the higher interest ones first. So you take your combined amount of debt and divide it by, say, how many months you want to pay it off. Say it's 1 year.
Okay.
You're going to divide that by 12. That's what you got to tackle every single month, and you will get there. So stay organized, stay budget, right, Casey?
You're taking that balance, dividing by 12 and breaking it down that way.
And it might be a two-year plan. It might be a three-year plan. It's going to be specific for everyone and their particular income level.
Totally. Right? And I mean, I think that play that you said of, you know, your online mobile banking that you mentioned earlier, you know, that is a good way to tackle debt. That is another way for you to kind of manage it. I mean, gosh, back in the day before they had mobile apps and mobile banking and stuff, we were sending in, you know, writing checks and sending it in, you know, trying to hit that on the sweet spot with, you know, 3 to 5 day, you know, in the mail, you know, make sure it gets there. So no late payments.
Oh, yeah, crazy.
For me personally, Addy's making a good point. I mean, you can go right onto that mobile banking app. It has transfers. It's got bill pays. It's got ways that, I mean, you can literally, I mean, for me personally, guys, I mean, I set it as calendar reminders on my calendar that pop up, you know, for me to make sure I'm making those payments on credit cards, for one, so I don't forget, you know, and this is what I do for a living, but hey, you know, payments can get missed sometimes. The second is it allows me also to sometimes then take a look at it and just pay more, right, when I'm making that on that online. So it's like, hey, Casey, reminder, make sure you're getting your credit card payment in this month. Perfect, go on there. Well, I only got, you know, $100 or whatever. I'm going to pay $75 this time instead of my minimum $35 payment or whatever it is. But you make a good point. That mobile app and online banking is a great way to stay ahead and on track on where your spending is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm getting used to it.
Yeah.
I would say another thing that has been an effective approach, if you have extremely high balances or you're carrying something and you want to tackle it, communicate with the credit servicer. So give them a call, because there are approaches I've seen that have been effective. Like, say you reach out to Credit Card One I'm making these up. I don't want to sponsor anybody, good or bad. But say you reach out to the person you have a credit card, and you're like, hey, are there any balance transfer opportunities? Now, this is a little more of an advanced strategy. So there are ways that you can take, say, the debt that you owe and you're paying interest on and move it over to a new card with that company at 0% interest for a certain period of time. It's not forever. It's usually like 6, 12, or 18 months is what it normally what I've seen. And there are some small transfer fees. It might be like 1% of the balance gets rolled in. But work with those credit companies to explore your options. And my last kind of advice on that piece, if you're going to go that approach, don't make a decision on the phone, because most people on the phone in that first call, just like we talk about other mortgage people trying to say, close you first call, like just absorb the information, take a lot of notes, talk to your spouse, or if you don't have a partner, think about it. I would say mentally marinate on it for a day. Don't make
mentally marinate.
Yeah, just let it soak in and review those notes and come back to it the next morning and make a decision whether you're going to do that or not. But try not to be closed by people on the phone, because most of those people and representatives are being paid for getting you to open an account. So just research and gather that balance transfer opportunity. If you do have higher debts or need to explore that for any reason, that is an effective approach that I've seen in the past.
Addie's right now literally like teeing me up for my own, like, I've been sitting here with, I got a couple credit cards, you know, and they're small balances, but just the interest rates are just garbage on some of these things, you know, and I'm like, dude, what do I do? And I've been thinking about the rollover. Like, now it's like, am I going for miles, you know? So like what you're saying is really right, because I'm easy. Like if I called, you know, whoever, you know, 1-800-GO-ALASKA or whatever the heck it is, you know, and I'm like, all right, you know, transfer over this balance, you know, hey, can I get some miles out of that? Right, no. Right. All right. That's cool. You know, like I'm in, I'm easy. So that gives me a lot of good stuff to think about it, because guys, you don't want to just make a decision right out of the gate when you're talking to somebody. Take your time, look over the data, make sure you're getting yourself in the right card or with the right thing or whatever you want, because I think that's smart, because, yeah, I was thinking about just rolling something and off to the races I'd go, and it sounds like I need to do a little bit more research.
Well, and I'd say, too, Casey, like another thing a lot of people get fooled about, and even it catches my attention with spam mail, like physical spam mail, is that bonus. You know, like open up a new card, get a $200 bonus. Here's the skinny on all this, guys. Most of the time, ignore the bonus. Look at the annual fee. You want to focus on zero annual fee on credit cards. And why is that? Because you want to extend history of credit. You don't want to be opening and closing accounts. If you get a card, you want to keep it for many, many, many years. Look at it as like a 10 to 20 year partnership. So if it has a $200 annual fee, you're going to be paying that for decades. And it's likely not worth that one time $100 bonus, $200 bonus, points bonus, because you're going to be paying it for the rest of your life. And if you don't, it's going to affect your credit score, because credit often, I like to use this analogy, I've noticed that credit works a lot like an attendance record. So every time you make your payment on time, you get a gold star, right? Yeah, and say you've got credit card number one, like, oh, I had this for 3 years on time, never the same. And they're carrying a small balance and they pay it off and close it out because it's just collecting dust, right? That whole history is now wiped. You just threw out your perfect attendance record. So we see a lot in the mortgage world where people are like, I'm just going to pay off my car. My goal is to be debt free. And I always say, don't do any dramatic payoffs, because we can always pay that off at the end when you're closing on a home. Right?
Yes, sir.
And it's not going to affect that credit score, because I've seen people pay off their auto loans and their score dramatically goes down for a short amount of time because that was their gold star attendance record.
So advice then, one, obviously, you know, Addie's point there too, if you're paying off a card and closing a card out, guys, you're closing out all that history. You're closing out all the history you've built.
Gone like a whiteboard.
Gone with the wind. Mm-hmm. And so, flip side, let's just say I am the guy. Like, I got my two little cards, you know, I'm going to roll over and get a new card, Addie. Mm-hmm. Advise me then, or what would you say would be a good way for me to approach this? Is that something then, do I just want to keep those cards with me open, small balance or no balance credit card, and just leave it at zero and just kind of?
Well, according to the FICO models, as well as the CreditWise research that we did prior to the show, they're saying that you should have a minimum of 3 credit cards. A minimum of 3. For some reason, all the research is saying that, and once again, compliance. It's so hard to put me together. Yeah, don't say that I did it. Told you to. But this is the research from CreditWise and the FICO apps specifically. 3 minimum trade lines establishes a well-rounded credit portfolio, if you will. Now, if you're looking to get a new one, I always think, like, from what I've seen and read on the simulators, is you don't want to have more than one inquiry a year or a new account. I think a lot of people are closing and opening more than they need to, and it starts getting pretty sophisticated. But focus on getting those first 3 and then working on the no annual fee, and then increasing those limits. Make sure you're communicating with the credit card company every like 6 months on increasing your limit, because if you do that, say you get your limits up over time from like 500 to 1,000 to 5,000 to 10,000 to 20,000, then you can start using credit as a tool, right?
Yeah.
Because you're going to be able to charge temporarily a lot more, and say you need to buy a couch. That might be like 500 to 1,000 to 2,000, whatever the couch might be, amount of people.
Yep.
Sectional, you know,
Chase Lounge,
high performance fabric. You never know what stain prevention.
You gotta have that
pet prevention.
Kid prevention,
right? If you have a $10,000 limit on a car or on a card, and you're paying those balances down, and you're not carrying any debt on it, you're able to charge up to $2,000 and still be at 20% utilization. So you're not going to see the needle move on a credit score for someone who has that high of a allotted credit line. However, say your limit's only $4,000. You've now executed 50% utilization trying to buy this card, or sorry, this couch, and your credit's going to go down.
Yeah.
There's no difference whether it was on there for 2 months, whatever, same purchase, just the credit allowed. That ratio is determining a lot of the scores. So you really want to focus on just slowly over time, and this takes years and years and years, but getting those limits higher and higher and higher, because your percentage is just going to stay super, super low.
God, you're dropping some good nuggets today. I mean, if I didn't know, I'd think this guy was the credit man, you know? Yeah. I mean, this is real talk he's giving you guys, some real skinny information here. And you know what's kind of interesting to me, I guess, and this is from just a client perspective when I see stuff. You know, you do see it where a client has multiple credit cards. I mean, we're talking sometimes, you know, it could be 8, 9. I mean, you got a lot of credit cards. And then you always hear, you know, if you were to kind of probe the question or ask, you know, hey, is there something we can clean up here? You want me to kind of take a look at maybe some debt consolidation or something like that? And a lot of them are, nah. They like it because of whatever little kickback bonus it's giving you, you know? It's like, oh, no, we got that card because it gave us, you know, $250 credit the first month we bought, you know, at Macy's or whatever it is. And, guys, I think Addy makes some key points. Don't get lost on these promotional things up front on it, guys. I mean, really, I mean, 8 or 9 credit cards, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that can just get out of hand. And if, God forbid, an unknown year of 2020 happens with Corona.
Right.
I mean, did we plan for that to be able to cover all our cards? I don't know. You know, so that's where it can get snowballed, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. And like those like cashier side promotions, like I haven't seen a situation where the long run it's worth it. So even we all get that. You go to your, you know, Macy's, Best Buy or whatever, and it's like you could save 20% on this purchase, or TJ Maxx or like whatever it is, Marshalls. And it's not worth it because that short term savings, it's like say you spent $100. Oh, I just saved $20 for opening this new credit card with TJ Maxx.
Yeah.
$20, right? But it's moved now your credit score from say a 720 to a 695 because you opened that.
Yep.
The change in your interest rate on your most important investment, your house, your mortgage, or if you're planning, that could shift interest rates in some situations depending on loan program, your other lender you're working with, compliance, all this stuff. you could be taking a 0.125 upwards to 0.5% hit on $250,000, $500,000 loan amounts.
He's talking real talk, guys.
So it's big deals. Like, just because you wanted to save $20-$40 on your purchase, like the curbside or the register side, it doesn't make a huge difference. It kills you on the mortgage side. We're talking $50, $100, $200 a month in your mortgage, not to mention tens of thousands of dollars in interest. So look at it from the big picture. It's even awkward. Like, I've worked really hard to get my credit from very bottom of the barrel, no one would talk to me, all the way up to primo status. I've worked really hard at it. Still,
You went from deep subprime up to super prime.
Super prime being polished. But it is still awkward for me when someone at the register asks me if I want to open the card. And I say no every time, and I almost feel guilty, and it's like this weird mental thing. Yeah,
why do you feel guilty, though?
Well, if you had common sense, you would act on this now. But, you know, just use your line back, and I'm good, thanks so much. They have to ask. They're getting paid to ask. It's their job. They don't really care. Now, you get that shovel. Oh, it's a really good deal. You should totally do it. They're pushing it because they're like, four managers going to give them a Starbucks card if they close it. But just say no with a smile. Be like, I got plenty of credit cards. Appreciate it. You know, it's never worth it.
And that's, yeah, that I wish they would just say what it is, because I think that helps people in line. Like, hey, do you want another credit card? Because then that changes it, right?
Right. They get all these, like, fancy, like, the exclusive, you know, consumer club. Yeah, would you like to be a part of it? And then you find out, oh, it's really a credit card. But you just be aware, just say no, pass forward, because in wrapping this together, and I promise we're going to land the plane here, wrapping this together to a common approach of refinancing cases, a lot of people find themselves in debt, or their entire plan was to rack up debt and then refinance their mortgage and utilize the equity in the home to pay off that debt. But in most cases, they're not actually paying it off. They're rolling it into the loan, right? Mm-hmm. So you are actually now, let's say it was like $8,000, right? You take $8,000 and refinance, roll that in, so you have one easy payment now. The lower interest rate, and a lot of mortgage people are going to try to talk consumers into doing it so that you will refinance. You're still paying interest on it. And not only you're still paying interest on it, you're paying a new 30-year in most cases. And I wrote this out. I did this math.
Yeah.
$8,000 in credit card debt rolled into a refinance. Over 30 years, you will pay $4,900 in additional interest
on that
$8,000. And that's using the scenario of 3.5% interest rate.
Wow.
Think about that. Over 50% of what you owed, you are going to now pay. So, guys, I think that's something that is never talked to about the eager beaver mortgage guy or gal trying to close you on the refi.
Oh, yeah. And you hear it all the time. And we get your car loan wrapped in there. We get all these credit cards wrapped in there. Get all that stuff wrapped in. Just, but you save $300 a month.
Right.
You know? You're saving $300 a month. Also, too, what they're not telling you is they're closing out all those accounts, too. All those accounts are getting closed.
Yeah.
We're paying them off.
Build out a plan and to tackle it.
That loses your history again, too. So now it's like we're just adding more. God, that's a good episode, guys. This is a good episode.
Yeah, and I know it's a really heavy and touchy subject, but on a positive note, you just got to build a plan. And I want to extend my bedside manner even further and say, everyone's got a case-by-case situation, and you got to do what you got to do to take care of your family. But note that, like, at least there's a lot of tools such as the MLO team. I know, obviously, we've got Casey here today. We have Bree. We have Christian. Hit us up on that VIP line if you want to have a mortgage strategy call. You want to figure out how to grow your credit, whether you're trying to buy a new home in 3 years or 3 months. It doesn't matter to us. Like, we sit down and have those video or phone call conferences and help people build out a strategy, right, Case?
Yeah, and we just want to help you guys make your best decision you can. I mean, there's nothing more frustrating than having people make decisions when it's like you could have gave them a couple nuggets of info that would have set them up in a much better position, you know, long term. You know, you just, but you don't know what you don't know. You know, so if you guys really don't know, I mean, please give us a call. Please reach out. We're happy to try to give you as much information as we have. We're missing a couple peeps. You know, normally you got me and Addy, CK and Bree, but we're keeping it COVID. We keep it 6 feet apart. We're going to kind of do these two-man shows. But, you know, guys, credit cards, consumer debt spending, coming up into the holidays and stuff like that, it's a big deal. I'm glad Addy was able to just really give you guys some good information on some of that stuff. You know, be wise, make a plan. I do want to shout out, I know we have some just kind of different stuff out there, and I'm going to give a shout out to this article and this individual, actually, that I read about the other day. So you got this individual, Nick Molnar, and Nick Molnar is an Australian. He's actually the first 30-year-old billionaire Australian, and it directly ties into what me and Addy, you know, were kind of going over today. Nick is kind of your tech guy and app guy. So he saw this, you know, as he's a younger individual like us, saw how consumers were spending, saw specifically how millennials were spending. And so how do we help them out? How do like me and you not just keep getting credit right. cards and stuff like that? He came up with an app, and this isn't any kind of promo, guys. It was just something I thought was a good way to help people financing-wise. It is called Afterpay. It is an Afterpay app, and it just allows consumers to take their purchase, let's just say it's $100, and they can break it into four payments that are interest-free payments. So four $25 payments helps them maybe keep that off the credit cards, helps that $100 payment or $100 purchase stay a $100 purchase. Retailers are liking it because it's bringing more consumers in, so they're all for it, and you know, now it's a public traded company and so forth and so forth. But people out there are trying to help people be better about spending. As mm-hmm. me and Addy are, we're trying to give you guys, you know, knowledge and advice. So, you know, for us, we don't have a cool app or anything like that. Maybe not yet. But we do have that phone number, 503-847-9038. You guys can call us anytime for any kind of, you know, information. We're happy to try to help you.
Yeah, hit us up on that line. And that Afterpay thing, we have no affiliation with any of these companies that we've named. No one pays us a penny to talk. Or none. It's the raw deal. But to Casey's point, immerse yourself into making some changes financially, structurally for your household, whether it's managing debt, looking to expand your home, all these great things. And if you aren't listening to us, we have our podcasts out there, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get them podcasts. And if you're just a listener, check us out. You know, we're on television, we're on Facebook, we're doing the live streams. You find us, we're there to be consumed how you prefer. So until next time, Casey, we will
check you later.
Boom, shika, boom, boom.